And we're live. Hi, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Christian.
And welcome to the Crab Couple. So we got a new mic.
And a stand.
And we're super excited. I feel like I can hear everything.
You can hear how much Nicole actually queefs when she talks.
I fucking hate
it's you. It's a subtle queef with every breath.
I hate you.
When she runs on the treadmill, it's like... It's like, I know you're not that gassy.
No, I was really concerned because honestly, in one of the podcasts we listen to or used to listen to, you can hear her when she's like, and it makes me so crazy. When Mal listens to this, she's going to know exactly who we're talking about.
Sometimes people get cotton mouth.
Like, take a fucking drink of water.
Me gets nervous and mouth instantly clams up. Shit, like a dust bowl now.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, we are super excited about our new equipment. So, hopefully, we have really great sound. We are recording directly on to the program we edit on, too. So, hopefully, we can produce better content for everyone.
Yay!
Woo! And I was super annoyed because I feel like I could hear some clicking and static in the last couple episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to listen to our episodes and, like, play them back because it's painful for me to listen to them. So, I don't know.
It's growth, though, babe. We're moving on.
That is true. That is true. So, do you have anything that you want to discuss before we get going?
Try to...
Our giveaway.
Yes.
So, we are doing a giveaway on social media. And basically, all you have to do is go and like the post on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Mm-hmm. And make sure you're following us on whatever social media you use. And then if you want extra entries, you can tag friends. And we're giving away the Encyclopedia of Serial Killers.
Yay. And Nicole's not going to read it, so.
I already looked into it a little bit. I'm honestly really jealous. I want to keep it, but it's fine.
Did you get it from Barnes & Nobles or Border?
Borders went out of business.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Honestly, I went into the Barnes & Noble right by my work, and it was so nice. It was two stories. It had a bunch of pops. I'm proud of you.
Have you been to the one in Calabasas? It's also a two-story one. There's like a Starbucks in it.
Yeah, there's a Starbucks in this one, too. It's very
nice. Love it. Love it.
It was really nice. And they had a whole true crime section. So that's why I went a little crazy. But I'm excited to do another giveaway because they had really cool stuff in there.
I think a couple goal for us, like if we ever get bougie, is to own a Barnes & Noble.
I don't know if they make that much money anymore.
Fuck Amazon.
I know.
But I feel like they're still around because of the aesthetic of going in one, you know? Because we went into one, the one that was by my old place in Santa Clarita, and got one.
Yeah, and I love it. When I went in there, I was like, why don't I hang out here more?
Because Amazon. Because we hate leaving the house.
True that. Alright, so I'm going to get started on today's episode.
Canada. Oh. What's their thing again? Isn't this episode in Canada?
Yeah.
I was singing their national anthem.
I don't know what the Canadian national anthem is.
You never heard it? We were watching Hard Knocks. The guy sang it the other day.
What? Who?
The long-haired tight end. Caleb Wilson. Wow. It's because you're always on that damn phone.
I'm working on the podcast, jerk. I want to give a big shout out to Jacqueline Olson and the Formidable Podcast for guessing our topic correctly this week. A relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister. A system of religious veneration and devotion directed toward a particular figure or object. A misplaced or excessive admiration for a particular person or thing. In the 1980s, a small community lived among the Canadian wilderness. Members of the community would later see and even take part in some of the most heinous acts of violence that ever happened in Canadian history. To make matters worse, these vicious acts were perpetrated by their own personal savior. The group would later become known as the infamous Ant Hill Kids Cult.
It's a mouthful, babe.
Yeah, it is a mouthful. Roche Theriault was born on May 16th, 1947. And can we just talk about the fact that his last name is Theriault?
Ooh, kill him. Ooh, kill him. Ooh.
I swear to God, no one. Okay, so I've listened to like 3 podcasts on this. I think 2. I listened to Zealot and I listened to Dark Poutine podcast on this topic. And none of them mentioned that. I was like, did none of you guys watch Vine?
They're all old people.
Yeah. I mean, no, they're not old, but they're definitely older than us. But yeah, it made me crack up. Because he's like super French, so it's spelled T-H-E-R-I-A-U-L-T. But it's pronounced Theriault.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love French.
So, he was born May 16th, 1947 in Saguenay Valley, Canada, to parents Hyacinthe and Pierrette.
This has to be, like, the French part of Canada, right?
It is, yeah, for sure it is. Their native language is French in Quebec.
That's funny, because, like, I view, like, Louisiana as, like, the French part of America, because it's Gyak Tigers and everyone's Cajun down there, which the food, baller, but...
wasn't it, like, the Louisiana Purchase was from the French or something?
Yeah, Napoleon sold it to fight the Punic Wars.
That's way past my history degree. So, a few years after he was born, the devout Catholic family moved to a city in Quebec called Thetford Mines. And, like you said, or like I mentioned earlier, they mainly speak French, and it's located a little above Maine and New Hampshire. So, I didn't realize how far east Quebec is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fucking cold there. The average temperature in winter is negative 18 degrees Celsius or negative 1 degree Fahrenheit.
Jesus Christ.
The average. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
So, Theriault only attended school until the 7th grade. I've seen some differing reports. Some said that the local schools only went up to 7th grade, and then some say he dropped out.
Interesting.
But it was obviously in the, early 60s?
Mm-hmm.
Late 50s, so I mean...
Who's really keeping track? My high school barely kept track.
I don't know. No, they did a good job, babe. They called you, like, 6 years after you graduated for your prom pictures.
Yeah, but I had, like, 205 unverified absences my senior year and still graduated.
I'm pretty sure everyone had a bunch of absences. Probably not 205, though.
You realize that's, like, 3 months of school.
Babe, you are such a fucking hard ass.
I was crazy. I, like, stayed home and, like, slept and, like, was fucking depressed and just kept sleeping and just didn't talk to anyone.
I wish I could say the same, but actually I did skip class a lot in my senior year, but I only had to go to school from 8:30 to 12:15.
My parents were also, like, hella divorced, so, like, it's kind of just me.
My parents were chilling. Hella divorced my entire life. So it's kind of just me chilling my entire life.
I feel you. It was kind of great, though. Like, I understand. Like, there's, like, that cutoff, like, when your parents get divorced. Like, when it's young, it's super shitty. But, like, I mean, it's obvious. It's super shitty whenever. But, like, 16 and 17, like, I kind of just checked out. And I kind of just had the house to myself, which is nice. Because I don't even have that now because you're always fucking here. But
okay, fuck you. You're always here.
I'm just kidding. What do you mean?
We live here. We both live here, okay? This is both our house. Okay, after school ended, Theriault started to focus his time intensely on religious studies. At 20, he married 17-year-old Francine Grenier in November 1967, and he had 2 sons with her in 1969 and 1971.
Giggity.
Throughout this time, Theriault developed stomach ulcers that ultimately had to be surgically removed. And I put a note here. I was like, I want to say he probably got the ulcers from the stress of having 2 kids at age 24 with a 21-year-old wife and only a 7th grade education.
And your main source of income being the church.
I don't even know. No, he didn't have any money at this time, so I'll go into it right now. Because his family was devout Catholic, but he hated...
Catholicism.
Mm-hmm, and he hated that his dad... Because his dad was actually part of the White Berets, which is like a super devout... Protestant Catholicism, I want to say.
Sounds super clannish. The White Knight sounds more like that.
No, it's actually... Actually, I didn't research it enough to know, but I don't think it's racist.
The white anything never has a great connotation.
Yeah. So, anyways, he... Like I said, he had to get it surgically removed, and it wasn't successful in relieving any of his stomach pain, so he became obsessed with medicine and anatomy. He also began to obsess with sex, and he drank alcohol to numb his stomach pain and began having affairs with women after nights on the town.
So, literally, the worst, as someone who has stomach pains, like, the worst thing you can do, like, for your stomach is to drink alcohol in excessive amounts.
I literally wrote down right here, I was like, alcohol hurts my stomach so bad. Doesn't it cause ulcers? And then I was like, how could he think that this fucking fire juice would help the holes in his stomach? Whatever. He was obviously... I feel like you can kind of already tell that he's very obsessive. And he kind of has an addictive personality.
No doubt. Yeah, because it seems like, yeah, first it's religion. He, like, hops onto that. And then, like...
Anatomy.
Maybe his wife, and then anatomy, and then...
sex. So he kind of keeps those obsessions his entire life. Alright. He went bankrupt, and his home was repossessed after his attempted woodworking business failed in 1976.
Woodworking business?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's so great.
So, his wife leaves him.
Good shit.
Right? I was like, I wrote here, good for you, Francine. The woman was 26 years old with 2 kids under 4 and still divorced this guy.
She has her whole life left to live.
I mean, yeah, but you also have to think, like, she's young. That's a hard move to make. So I was like, good for you, girl. Good for you. In the next year, everything moved really quickly. So pay attention and ask questions if you want me to clarify anything, because I want to make sure that I keep everything clear and concise. After the divorce, Terrio started officially dating a woman that he'd been having an affair with while he was married. Her name was Giselle LaFrance.
Giselle LaFrance?
I kind of laughed at the name LaFrance because I was like, L'America, La Norway, La Chile.
La Mexico?
Yeah, like, what kind of name is fucking LaFrance?
Le Bangkok. Le Bangkok.
Terrio also joined the Seventh-day Adventist Church around this time that he met up with Giselle, and he joined the church in the hopes of quitting drinking.
Interesting.
Seventh-day Adventists follow a strict doctrine called the 28 Fundamental Beliefs. Their beliefs are very traditional and conservative. They observe the Sabbath on Saturday. They're not allowed to drink or smoke. They don't celebrate Christmas, and many members restrict their diet to, quote, healthy foods, meaning many don't eat meat.
Interesting. The only thing I can get behind is church on Saturday, because I like to keep Sunday strictly for fantasy football. And
no, they still go to church on Saturday. I mean Sunday.
No fucking way. 2 days? They have the whole weekend?
Actually, that's a great question. I don't... I'm pretty sure they still go on Sunday.
I thought that they don't. It's a lot of church.
Yeah. That is a lot of church.
I did, I can't remember why I was in church like 2 years ago, but I was looking at fantasy football on my phone, and Nichelle, who's my sister, that is also into fantasy football, I, like, looked over, and I was like, are we going to hell for doing this? And she was like, no, we're good, we're good.
God loves football.
I, like, went to communion right after, so technically, like, doesn't that wash away my sins? Like,
no.
Yeah, I checked the score before, I put it in my pocket, took communion, and then I went home. So,
doesn't communion just mean that you are taking the blood and the bread of Christ?
I thought you're like repenting and shit. Honestly, like...
No, that's baptism. You're thinking of baptism. When you get dipped in the water.
Like, that's what, like, saves you. But, like,
I don't know, because we have people who are religious that listen to this podcast, so I'm just going to go ahead and ask Mel and Luke. Shout out. Can you please clarify what baptism is and
communion? Well, I know what a baptism is. It just... Like, my church, they're Greek Orthodox, and the whole sermon, it's all in Greek. So, it's just someone shouting at you in a different language. And so, like, 98% of the church, like, knows what they're saying, and then it's just my American family that was never indoctrinated, that just, like, Because it's translated, but, like, they're speaking so fast.
What do you mean it's translated?
So, like, the Bible, like, the left side is...
Oh, I thought you meant, like, someone was, like, speaking after each sentence. Well,
here's the thing is, like, when it... If you don't speak Greek, like, you have to follow it from when it starts. If you lose, it's not like you can just, like, oh, he's saying... Because, like, the letters are, like, fucking awful. Like... If you get out of place, there's no way to catch back up because you have no way to tell what point in the page you're at.
I'm going to just move this a little closer to you.
You just want to put it actually just inside my fucking mouth? Or...
Yeah. Lick the microphone. Okay, test.
Better lick my microphone.
It's not picking up your voice as well.
You better lick my microphone.
Okay, thanks. No, a little closer, please. Terrio got heavily involved with the Seventh-day Adventist Church and their strict beliefs. He started selling religious literature and taught seminars on how to quit smoking, and he thoroughly excelled at it. It's ironic because Terrio constantly degraded his devout cock.
Run it back.
I almost said his devout cock.
You are horny.
No, it's just intimidating. This microphone is so good. I feel like I can hear myself thinking. Oh my gosh. Okay. So it's ironic because Terrio constantly degraded his devout Catholic father for going door to door, preaching his beliefs. And it was through these seminars and teachings that he was able to gather a small group of followers. And I've never understood, because I get, like, three people like me. I have, like, three friends. But apparently this guy was so charismatic and charming and, like, influential on these people that he could get, like, 20 people to follow him. What the fuck? How?
Babe, I bet if you just put on your swimsuit and took a photo, I bet you could find 20 people to follow you, too. It's not that impressive.
Okay, well, that is a good point. But, I don't know. It's just bizarre.
It's Canada. Like, what else have they got going on?
But I do want to also...
Not to be mean, but, like, someone comes to your door selling you a better life, you're just like, oh, hey, okay.
Yeah. Oh my god. Okay, well, if you think about it, though, it does kind of make sense, because many of his followers were young women, and I have to imagine they're kind of like Anne from Parks and Rec.
I'm fucking upset. And he, like, kind of pseudo-dates them, and they just adopt his super psycho-religious.
So things. It's like, they kind of become who he wants them to be. And as a young adult, and especially a young woman, it's super easy to get lost as you're, like, trying to find yourself. And these people are trying to quit smoking, so they're trying to, like, a lot of people...
They're hella fragile.
Exactly. And a lot of people replace an addiction with something that's more...
An addiction.
Something that's more... More socially and, like, societally...
Acceptable.
Exactly. It's also easy to fall into an abusive relationship because apparently he would, like, commit all these acts and then he would apologize the next day. So it's not like he was all evil all the time. Around October 1977, Terrio, still obsessed with medicine, set up the Healthy Living Clinic in Sainte-Marie-des-Buss. With his followers. He continued to sell the religious literature along with nutritional items that were supplied by the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Less than a year after opening the Healthy Living Clinic, Terrio convinced one of his friends to check his sick wife out of a hospital and into the Healthy Living Clinic so Terrio could treat her leukemia.
What?
Yeah, it's not like the fucking flu. Leukemia. You cannot cure leukemia with grape juice, honey. No. She dies. Obviously, she fucking dies.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And then, the best part, fucking crazy ass Terrio. Ooh, can we...
Literally kill him.
He fucking claims that he revives her. But, conveniently, when no one else is around, kisses her and then says... God tells him it's her time and takes her anyway.
It's kind of like the Book of Mormon.
Oh my god.
The musical.
The musical.
Which is really funny.
Oh my god. Okay, so that brings us to 1970. I need to stretch my legs out. My fucking legs hurt. Ooh. Thank you. Thank you, my sunshine angel.
I'm gonna take a hand of the water real quick.
Same. Please. I really dig this setup.
Any closet is a walk-in closet if you try hard enough. That's what HGTV taught me.
Not when you're 6'5".
Thanks for putting that other inch in there.
You're welcome.
You're okay. My recruiting profile.
So that brings us to 1978. Terrio's tactics, coupled with the death at the Healthy Living Clinic, had him expelled from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And the church cutting him off means he's not making any more money because he's not selling the religious literature, you know?
So he's getting commissions off selling Bibles?
Confusing, right? I'm assuming it's more so like, you know those like people who are like Christian authors and they're like, how Christianity changed my life. So it's not like actual Bibles. It's more like people telling their story and like how God works through them. So I'm assuming it's more so like those types of literatures that they're selling. But the church,
I have no clue what you're saying.
It's because you never go to church.
I have been to church.
But like I'm saying, you were never super involved or anything. So you never I have books. I will show you that.
I went to Saturday school.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I put in the time.
I love you.
You know what else was on during church? Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon. And there was no TiVo. We had VHS. You know what? We all gave up
for something. What, like 3 years before you turned 10 and there was DVD?
No. What do you mean? We didn't get DirecTV until... Well, DirecTV didn't give us the option to record until I was in high school. It was hard. We had to struggle, you know?
Oh, my God.
More parks to trap.
Oh, my gosh. So, he and his followers move into the freaking Canadian wilderness. Great cult leader tactic because he's further isolating them. And on top of that, they're building their own little town by hand, working 17 hours a day.
Kind of like the Rajneeshi.
I don't know what that is.
Never seen, like, it's like Wild Wild Oregon. It's like that, like, Indian spiritual group that, like,
Oh, yeah. And they, like, poisoned the people for the election.
Yeah, and then they also, like, shot up a hotel or something.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Well, working 17 hours a day, exhausted would be an understatement.
Right.
And it's way easier to manipulate people when they're sleep deprived. And he's also rationing their food.
That's the classic signs of a cult leader.
Yeah, so not only are they freaking exhausted, they're starving. So it's easy to take hold of those kinds of people. I feel like this man knew what he was doing. Like, I love food. I would never deprive someone of food.
Right.
At this point, Terrio had 17 followers, 4 men, 9 women, and 4 kids.
I was doing the math, and I was like, where the fuck is the last 4 gonna come from?
And he renames everyone with biblical names at this point, and his, of course, being Moses. He also has a revelation then tells all his followers that the world's going to end in February 1979. Classic cult.
Super specific.
Yeah, I mean, every time I hear, they're like, oh, the world's going to end on this specific date. Like, it's never good. Just don't set a fucking date.
Right.
The world is going to end sometime soon.
Give yourself a window. Thank you.
Sometime soon. Be vague. Vague.
I can't believe how many dumbass people had me convinced in 2000 that the world was gonna... Or not 2000, when was that?
2012.
Yeah, that, like, the
Like,
mind,
the Aztec... Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And people are like, but it ends, and I was like...
You're like, that's but so it's dumb. Not.
But, like, now, like, you triggered my anxiety for, like, small, minute reason.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. So, despite the world ending February 1979, he tells all of them that they're the chosen people and God will save them come February if they denounce society and become one with nature. And he also marries all the women in the cult.
Good shit.
And he tells all his followers that he has to have the devil beaten out of them.
All this play just to have 9 women.
Oh my God, we never did our disclosure. You know what? We can still start now because it hasn't all gotten there. You know, we're going to be describing graphic... I'm going to be describing graphic depictions of torture, sex abuse, child abuse. Just cut it off now if you're sensitive. Not you, Paulina. Suck it up. Paulina said she couldn't handle the Fred and Rose West one.
I mean, it was heavy, but like...
That one was heavy. There was a lot of abuse. It's important to remember that the Jonestown suicide, where over 900 people died, that happened in November 1978. So the family members of Terrio's cult members, like their parents and whatever...
They're tripping.
Yeah, they're like, get the fuck out of there. So they keep calling the police saying, like, please go check up on our kids. Like, we want them to come home. But they're young adults, so they can't do anything, you know? And... this is the best part. This is how you know he is a fucking psychopath. Because he willingly undergoes psychological police evaluation. Because he knows that he can, like, charm... Yeah, he knows he can charm them out of it. So he does. That's exactly what he does. The police let him go, and they're like, he's a cool guy. He's a cool guy. No harm, no foul. What?
Especially Canadian police, eh?
Right.
Boy, he brought us donuts. Stand-up guy, eh? Checked out his alibi, eh? He was at the woodcutting place.
So he returns to the compound after the police interrogation. Basically a new man.
So compound, like, where are they getting the money from? Are people just, like, bringing their, like, life savings with them? And
yes.
Wow.
They are basically giving up all their possessions. And they're also baking goods, and that's how they're selling it. And also, he's prostituting the women out for food and groceries.
Wow.
Yeah. So, after he returns to the compound, after the police interview, it feels like he's basically a new man. He's, like, invincible. He thinks he can get away with anything. So, he starts eating meat again. He starts drinking again. He starts prostituting his wives. He basically becomes an angry, drunk dictator. Even worse than he was before. And his mental state just got even worse when the supposed end of the world came and went. His excuse was that God doesn't operate on the same timeline as mankind, which was the cause of the error.
I want to know his initial calculations.
35 plus... You know, remember in The Office when there's, like, Kevin's infinity or, like, squiggle? And it's, like, some random... Clevin or something.
If it doesn't add up, I just give it a Clevin.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that was so funny.
The end of the world is B plus or minus A.
And Clevin.
What's the quadratic formula again?
A squared plus B squared.
No, that's the Pythagorean.
Oh, isn't it the square root? Wait, what the quadrant? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I am so happy I'm not in math. Yeah. I'm in finance, but not math. So, meanwhile, the abuse just continued to get worse. And I always questioned how someone could stay in this type of environment. But like I kind of touched on earlier, one of his followers reported that he would sober up in the next morning and cry like a baby begging for forgiveness. I had an ex-boyfriend who used to be, like, severely abusive, and then the next day, or, like, even, like, the next hour, he'd be like, I'm so sorry, please take me back, like, never leaving me alone, texting me 45 times. It was awful. And now I can, like, in that sense, I can kind of get, I feel like a lot of women also have, like, that one relationship where they're like, why did I stay so long?
Mm.
You know? And in that sense, you can kind of relate, but to a much lesser degree. So he would promise he would promise that he'd stop his abuse, but instead it would only get worse. And I am just going to highlight some of the crimes that he has done, because I obviously need to cover the deaths he's responsible for, but some of them are so bad. It makes me so upset. When I listen to the Dark Poutine podcast, and I'll put all the source notes in the episode notes, but I literally texted Christian and I was like, I am screaming in my car, hitting my steering wheel right now. I was so upset. It was really hard to hear. But they go a little more graphic than I'm going to go. So, he made one man cut off his wife's toe after she wanted to leave the cult. And you're probably thinking, why did he do it? because Terrio came in with an axe and said he would cut off all her toes if he didn't do it. I feel like...
Did he just take her pinky toe?
Yeah, he did it, her baby toe.
Smart. Good man.
Yeah. He also made his followers eat shit.
Ew.
Yeah. And then also, he would nail the kids to the trees, like, by their clothes. So, thankfully, not with, like, their hands or anything. Things. Yeah. And then throw rocks at them. Yeah. Yeah.
You're a fucking bully.
Yeah. And then, in November 1980, a mentally ill man named Guy Veer joined the cult after escaping from a mental hospital.
First round pick. Select.
So, as any ill person should be, he was responsible for caring for the children of the compound that were not Terrio's. Key note here, not Terrio's. So, the children of the compound that weren't Terrio's were treated even worse than the children that he actually fathered.
Non-essential personnel.
And he fathers, like, 26 kids.
Yeah, he's busting a nut in 9 women.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason is they're all basically pregnant all the time. It's terrifying. And then they're working on top of that. Like, Jesus Christ. It's also super weird that to note that in 1980, his two kids from his first marriage with Francine, they come to live with him in the compound. So everything I said about Francine being a, like, bad bitch, no, I take it back. Fuck that hoe.
Yeah, she's like Casey Anthony. She's like, yeah. I want to go live my life.
Why the fuck did she let that happen? Yeah, I was like, check, please. After a few months of taking care of the kids, Veer couldn't handle the crying anymore. He repeatedly punched 2-year-old Samuel so bad that he was unable to pass urine. So Terrio, keep in mind he's still obsessed with anatomy and medicine, takes it upon himself to play doctor and operates on his genitals. Basically castrates him. And he dies the next day.
Oh my God, that is a horrible fucking death.
Mm-hmm. So that's 2 deaths that I feel like he's responsible for now.
Well, that's definitely murder.
Like. Yeah. Well, I mean, 2 with a leukemia patient. I think he's responsible. I mean, granted, she was, you know, leukemia
she
is...
Would, I mean, she definitely would have had a fighting shot being in the hospital getting treatment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a few months after this...
And like, even when she died, like, at least the hospital has, like, pain medication. Like, she's probably in so much pain, like...
Also, he wouldn't let her dad see her while she was there. Yeah. Sad. So, a few months after Veer basically beat the shit out of that little boy and then Terrio killed him, Terrio was in a drunken fit of rage and thought that Veer needed to be punished. And this is just, like, a few months later. So, he, like, takes time to stew on it. And then he... puts on a jury. So he makes everyone in the compound, like, do a trial, and they say that he's not guilty by reason of insanity. But he's like, nah, fuck this guy. So he castrates him and cuts off his balls.
This is like the trial of Julius Caesar on steroids.
Well, and there's no anesthetic, there's no clean tools. Like, I was reading that he, like, would cauterize the wounds with, like, a hot iron. Yeah.
Non-regenerative.
Yeah. I feel so, like, I'm so nonchalant about this right now because I've had to do so much research. That's why I posted, like, all the mental health stuff, and I feel like I've been putting on off this episode because it just gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
So, Terrio and other members of the cult actually served jail time for the death and mutilation of Samuel from 1982 to 1984. But after being released, they moved to Burnt River, Ontario, basically to avoid laws and get away from probation and so that he could still interact with the cult. They sold baked goods and became known as the Anthill Kids because they were like busy ants all working together, according to Terrio.
I'm upset.
And we're sweating in here.
We're in here talking about this piece of shit. He manipulated these people and he thinks of them like they're little worker bees.
Yeah, well, and he's not doing any of the work. His stomach
getting
is...
getting drunk. He's like, I'm sick.
I'm sick.
I'm sad. I need to drink it off.
My tummy hurts. And then I already told you that he ends up fathering 26 kids and his wives are basically always pregnant. But one of his followers, her name is Gabrielle Lavallée, she said that Roche was always telling us, she said, this is a quote, Roche was always telling us that it had to be that way because he was like Abraham in the Bible. He had to have many wives and children to keep his tribe going. Lavallée also said that Thériault would have sex with two or more of his wives at a time and make them compete to see which one of them would have the most orgasms. I'm going to go ahead and put a wild guess out there that none of them were having orgasms.
There's a lot of acting going on.
None of them. The Kawartha Halliburton Children's Aid Society had been keeping an eye on the compound because reports of abuse were going around, and the Quebec government actually issued a nationwide alert to the child welfare authorities about the cult. And the reason that I think that they kind of knew what was going on is because I know that his followers, when he was super drunk and he was, looking for people to, fuck up, they would just, run into the forest and hide, surrounding them. So I feel like they kind of have to, see people camping or hiking, something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but they also are, in the wilderness. You even realize Canada has so much space that, there's not,
that's
a lot
true.
Of people.
That's true. But, I mean, regardless, they...
Yeah, but it's not, oh, their neighbors should have known. There's, local
Oh, police, no. I just was trying to figure out how, the town and, how would Quebec be able to issue a nationwide alert? Yeah, the local town is the one that...
But I'm saying, how far are they from the local town?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
Because, like I said, I know a lot of, most of Canada, is, barren. It's pretty spread out, so...
Yeah.
It seems like the type of place if you wanted to just, run away...
Yeah.
And build a compound.
I mean, regardless, it's bound to get attention.
Yeah.
And in January...
I mean, they have to get, supplies and shit, too, so,
That's a great point. So they're probably who the fuck is this crazy-ass guy? And right. I'll show you a picture of him. Let me show you a picture right now, actually. This is him and his wives. Look at his fucking beard.
Wow, he's a fucking psycho.
Yeah, he's gross. In January 1985, Thériault ordered one of his wives to leave their new baby, Eliezer, outside in the Canadian snow. And the baby froze to death.
So number three.
Yeah, there's number three. In early December 1985, the Children's Aid Society took all 14 children from the compound, aged 5 months to 16 years. Thériault's wives gave birth to 9 more children over the following 2 years, and each was taken away as soon as they were born. And according to McLean's magazine, later investigations would quote that a 6-year-old girl said that the cult leader, quote, likes her to pull on his penis and make white stuff come out of it. Everybody is doing it, including mom. Mom and me take turns.
Oh my God, that is so... Oh
yeah.
Oh
my
God, that's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. These poor kids. Thériault spiraled further into sexual and medical violence when the children were gone. Because he has nothing else. He only can focus his anger on the adults, you know? And there's only, I think there was 10 of them. He put a rubber band on one of his male followers' testicles for over an hour until they swelled to the size of an orange and changed color. At that point, he decided that he needed to operate and castrated him. And then cauterized the incision with a hot iron. In 1988, one of his followers, Solange Boyard, had complained of stomach pains. So I'm learning, just shut the fuck up. Stop complaining. Right. Yeah. So within a few hours, Thériault stripped her naked and put her on a baking table and prepared to operate. He punched her in the stomach and cut her open. And let me reiterate, when I say prepare to operate, I mean, he probably took a couple swigs of alcohol. There were no clean tools. There was no anesthetic. There was nothing.
When you said punch the stomach, is he, putting on surgical gloves and then being boom, and hits her in the fucking stomach? What kind of...
I like to imagine that he is, doing the fusion dance before hitting her every time.
I gotta tenderize the meat before I cut it.
But I don't know, regardless, it's super fucked. And he also performed an enema with molasses and olive oil on her upper butt. Sounds awful. And I'm just
running experiments on people.
when he cut open her stomach, he ripped out pieces of her intestines and then sewed her back up. And she died the next day. Autopsies showed that digestive acids were poured directly into her abdominal cavity, which caused her death. So they think that he probably poured like alcohol directly into her stomach. Yeah. Tyrio wasn't done though. He and his followers dug up her body, drilled a hole in her head, and ejaculated into it. Yeah, they thought it would. He said that it would revive her. I have no words.
Oh my god. Yeah. Just a crazy people, just.
Yeah, so fucked up. Tyrio also removed one of her ribs and wore it as a necklace.
Like some Eve. Like as women are one less rib.
I don't know. I don't know what this poor girl did to, like, clearly he took out so much shit on her, you know? A few weeks after Boyard's death, Tyrio pulled out 8 of Gabrielle Lavallee's teeth with pliers. I read a few reports that she had complained of a toothache, but I also read some reports that she had just low pastry sales.
That's some Michael Scotch.
I'm going to pull out your teeth. So a few months later, Gabrielle seems to be the one who takes on like his punching bag now. Mm-hmm. Because a few months later, he stabs her in the hand with a hunting knife, pinning her to the table. So it's like, you know, when they do those like stabbing games and mm-hmm. they like accidentally stab you. So she's pinned to the table for 45 minutes before her hand and her arm starts turning black and blue. So then Tyrio drags her outside and lays her arm on a tree stump and amputates it with a meat cleaver. Yeah.
I'm guessing she dies too.
Nope. She doesn't. She does not die. So she has been like trying to escape and she always ends up coming back and he like ends up beating the shit out of her every time. But after this, she finally flees. Like, she waits a few days. She finally leaves, and she goes to the hospital and reports him, and he gets arrested. Or it leads to his arrest.
God, the Canadian police suck.
So after 6 weeks of searching the Canadian wilderness, they finally arrest him and capture him in early October 1989. So he had basically 11 years of his cult.
Wow.
Yeah. He was sentenced to 12 years for his crimes committed on Lavallee, but he wasn't even sentenced for Boyard's death until after she came forward once he was in prison. And then that's when he gets life in prison.
Wow. So he almost got, like...
Only 12 years for that shit. For the things he did.
For amputation.
Yeah. So basically, as long as you want... You can torture someone basically as long as you want. That's what's so scary to me, is attempted murder is... almost scarier to me than murder, because those people get off so much easier.
Didn't we learn that in the U.S. that's what getting charged with mayhem is? Because
mayhem is chopping someone's body off, like body part off.
Isn't that what he did to her though? He amputated her arm.
Yeah,
because that's like it's like maiming someone in a way that they
wouldn't be able to battle.
Yeah, defend themselves. Yeah,
yeah. According to Red Handed, love them. So one of his members. This is it gets even fucking crazier. Francine Laflemme.
Yeah.
Laflemme. She still continued to see Tyrio while he was in prison and even gave birth to a son from one of her conjugal visits from him.
Why is he getting conjugal visits?
Why the fuck is she still seeing... Why is he even allowed to have visitors?
Exactly.
He should be in solitary.
Or dead.
Just wait. So that was their fifth baby together. And on February 26, 2011, Tyrio's cellmate, Matthew McDonald, fastened a shiv and stabbed him to death.
Wow. Good for him, though.
When he was done, he went right up to the guards, handed them the shiv, and said, quote, "That piece of shit is down there on the range. Here's the knife. I've sliced him up."
I am so fucking happy. He probably just was done with his shit. He's like, yo, that kooky shit worked for your fucking frat that you had, but like, this shit will not fucking fly in here. So he's like, I hope that he was already on a life sentence. And He did.
He was already on a life sentence.
Love
it. He got sentenced to another life sentence. He's like, cool, I'll take it.
Antonio Brown, fine me for that. Punts the football. Gets kicked off the Raiders.
Oh, my gosh. So that is our story of the Ant Hill Kids in Roche, Ontario.
The Canadian cult.
Mm-hmm. So that is our North America case. What are your thoughts?
Oh, that was a heavy one. Would you classify him as a serial killer because of... I mean, it was, like, inadvertent. Like, it wasn't as...
I mean, technically, he had three. He had the leukemia patient, he had mm-hmm. the baby, and Solange. But at the same...
The one with the stomach as well.
That was Solange.
Oh, that was Solange.
Yeah. But at the same time, I don't know what he would classify it as. He's just kind of a fucking psychopath.
Right. And a rapist, child rapist. Mm-hmm. Like...
He had a lot. There was a lot of, like, sexual sadism. It was really sad. I kind of didn't want to include that much of the chat. Like, I just wanted to say, like, it was there. And, like, mm-hmm. even the child, like, children reported it.
Right.
But I didn't want to go too in-depth on what happened there because it's so hard to hear that. Like, those children didn't deserve that.
Yeah, that broke my heart when you said that.
Yeah. Those children didn't deserve that, of course.
Isn't that incest? Aren't they his children?
That's a great question. Yeah, they are. They are his kids. I mean, I don't know, because I know that there were some that weren't his kids.
Mm-hmm. But the other four men.
But one of them fucking died, so, like, how many are left that aren't his kids, you know?
Right. And then allowing that gentleman that was severely mentally...
He ended up, once, like, the trial happened and they went to jail, he ended up going back to the mental hospital, which is where he should have been.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he escaped.
Yeah. It's just crazy. I can't believe that happened. I had never heard of this
before.
Yeah,
me either.
And then I listened to a bunch of podcasts and I tried to research a bunch of, like, mm-hmm. episodes. Or the crazy thing, I looked for the book, Savage Messiah, and I could only find it on Amazon and it was, like, $40 and I wasn't about to go buy that. No, I was shocked that it wasn't at Barnes & Noble, though.
Slipping.
Yeah. There's a really good article from, like, it's like a 1983 spread on, what's his face? Fucking, Kill Ontario. And that one's really good. I got a lot of information from there. But I also didn't want to take, like, all my information from just the podcast. I don't want to rip off their work, you know?
No, of course.
So.
Here our pupper is just going psycho.
Oh my gosh, I wonder, we always are like, oh my god, I can hear Tanky, I can hear Tai Tai, but now we really can. So we'll wrap up. I want to end our episodes with Pugs North always, but I do want to end and say thank you for everything. Please check out our Patreon and give us a rate and review if you enjoy.
Like, comment, subscribe, and maybe check out the Patreon.
Check out the giveaway. Go yes. Like, it's so easy. Just go like our picture.
And it's really nice. It's a really nice book.
Yeah, it's really cool. I like to have, like, little interesting books on our coffee table. You know, right. When, like, you have guests over and they like to, like, read through things.
Or read it and re-gift it.
Yeah, that's a good thing, too. Yeah, read it and re-gift it. Just take care of it. Okay, let's invite our...
Snorts,
yeah. Let's invite our little puggos out here.
Our little children. Oh, I'm just gonna, like, overflow into the hallway.
Also, let us know how you like our new sound system. We'll post a little picture of our 3-foot cell. Here they come. Hi. Hi. Hello. Tinky, come say hi. Okay, have a great week.